stop? Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Oh, no! Don't be afraid. It's only the truth. Here we are tonight. It's the Hour of Truth. We're on the State Sovereignty Program with Dave, and that guy over there is Mike Slack. How you doing, Mike?
I'm raring to go.
Absolutely.
Been
I look forward
day,
to Friday
night.
It's
going to be a nice
Pardon? Yeah, been a long week. We got that election behind us on Tuesday. We'll talk about that quite a bit tonight. We'll talk about some of the stuff we got coming up. Well, right now, we're going to get focused. We're going to get refocused here. This is the State Sovereignty Show. We've had several weeks off talking about things that really, really were state sovereignty, but didn't directly tie into the theme. Kind of got off on five very important questions on the ballot, and I of course ranted about our guest tonight, Mike Moon. He'll be with us tonight. He'll be joining us at some point. We'll probably put in a call to our friend Lloyd Sloan and get a little bit of his analysis. Lloyd and Keith Carmichael will be back with us next week kind of in the theme of getting back to the state sovereignty issues. Lloyd, of course, is the chief pusher, nationally even, of the state repeal amendment. And Keith Carmichael is the state chairman of Convention of States. I believe that next week you have Preppers and Patriots. You'll probably be absent or just in and out all week. I know you'll be very, very busy. Keith will be there, won't he?
Keith will be there with the Article 5 Convention of
right.
States table.
Yeah.
And, you know, Doreen Hannes will be there, Tom Taylor, a lot of folks from the different property rights coalition groups. The Missouri Freedom Alliance will be there, the Constitution Party. Judy Sofka with the Missouri Precinct Project, Oath Keepers, several really good liberty-minded organizations will be there.
Libertarians?
The Libertarians could not get enough folks to man a table. They wanted to be
okay.
there, and everybody was tied up.
Yeah.
So they're there in spirit.
Right.
It's not in person.
There will be plenty of Libertarians there, though.
Oh, certainly, yeah. And we have the Missouri Militia represented. It turns out a lot of the Oath Keepers in St. Louis are members. I knew that we had a militia in Missouri that was actually sanctioned by state government or by the governor, but was independent citizens. I don't know very much about it. So I'm anxious to meet these guys and find out about it.
Cool. Okay, well, let's start Before we switch gears with our analysis of the week. Mike Moon won handily. I was very pleased with that. Proud of the folks in Lawrence County. When I went on this door-to-door with Mike and his folks, two things really impressed me. One was that the people in Lawrence County get it. I mean, it really wasn't just about, oh, this guy's our incumbent, so we're going to vote for him. I mean, those people really get it. They appreciate Mike. They appreciate a constitutional voter. They appreciate his outlook on things. They appreciate the fact that here is a really, really smart bright thinker. And yet, he's just a regular guy like you and me. You know, a cow farmer and just down to earth, talks plain to folks, even though probably in the intelligence level, I know he's well above me, but I was just really impressed. And the other thing that really impressed me, really, really impressed me, was the number of young people that I talked to, young couples, couples with children, young folks who were gung-ho for Mike, for what he stands for. I'm really optimistic at the way the youth are coming around to the liberty side of things.
I am as well.
Yeah.
Have you noticed how many young people are libertarians or libertarian-leaning Republicans compared to past years?
Yes.
Reason Magazine has covered that in the past. And there's even a show on the Fox News Channel called The Independents. Pardon me. The folks on there are not 20-somethings anymore, but it is extremely popular with that 20-something demographic.
Yeah.
Kennedy, a former MTV VJ, is one of the hosts of that show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And she's still pretty hip. She wrote an article about coming out as a libertarian while she was at MTV.
Cool.
Apparently an experience for her.
Yeah.
She just discovered she didn't like having the government do stupid things.
Well, yeah. Plus, you know, she probably was a little bit disgusted when the town meeting they had with a presidential candidate boiled down to whether he wore boxers or briefs.
Yeah, and I still don't remember which he wore, nor do I care. So if anyone remembers, keep it to yourself.
Well, I can tell you a couple of women who remember, but oh well, never. What did you think of what happened to Amendment 1? Let's just start right there.
Well, first, let me say I'm awfully glad that election is over. Amendment 1 was very contentious. We had a lot of conservatives who were for it, a lot who were against it. And then on the liberal side, the Democratic Party itself was for it. Most Democrats I knew were for it. Were against it. But most of the very liberal elected office holders who were Democrats in Kansas City came out for it, and that surprised me. And then, you know, you had the Humane Society of the U.S. on one side, which people fear and hate, and you had Monsanto on the other side, which people fear and hate. I thought it was kind of coming down to who you feared and hated the most. I was surprised, though. I was expecting it to pass by 60-40, really. And it was so close, I understand they're going to have a recount in its passage.
Right, they are. You can ask for a recount in this state any time the vote is within a half a percentage point. And if you ask for that recount, it will be automatic. It's not an automatic recount. In other words, they don't just automatically recount, but within one half of 1%, any time it's asked for, it will be granted. There will be a recount. They're not going to find 2,500 votes one way or the other in a recount, so it will pass. But I like the idea of the recount. Because it's going to once more point us to the fallacies of these electronic voting machines.
Mm-hmm. You know, Doreen Hannes should come on and tell us sometime about the system in Germany she studied. But Germany is more of a representative republic than the U.S. now, with more accuracy in their voting. Everything is done by hand, counted in public. Anyone can go in the room and watch the counting being done. It's very secure. representatives of every political faction observing the counting. I would love to see us return to paper ballots here.
Yes.
But, you know, the thing that bothered me about Amendment 1, whether it passed or failed, is we had 25% of the voters voting, and it was so close, basically 12.5% decided.
Right.
And it's a constitutional amendment decided by 12.5% of the people.
What doesn't
seem right?
What does bother me about what you just said is that only 25% of the people voted. What doesn't bother me about that is the other 75% are total ignoramuses on these issues, and those are not the people you want voting. Now, it bothers me that 75% of the people don't care enough to get out and get educated on these issues, but it does not bother me that people who don't get out and get educated on the issues don't then go and vote. Now,
how do you feel about things like motor voter and
I don't,
you know,
like
when someone signs, I don't either.
See, I don't
when
like
someone
them
signs up for food stamps, they ask if they'd like to register to vote.
Yeah, and that, you know, that decreases that percentage you're talking about too, because we would be talking about 20, and when you say 25%, you're talking about 25% of the registered voters, not 25% of the eligible voters, but 25% of the registered voters, not a quarter of the people who are eligible to vote, many hundreds of thousands of which aren't even registered. And so, but you're talking about 25% of the registered voters who actually turned out. Now, that number, you know, things like motor voter and food stamp sign up you know, registration drives that go out to the local mall and just sign people up to vote willy-nilly, those things make your voter turnout look a lot worse because you are registering a whole lot of people who will never in their life vote.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
true.
So,
but, you know, I think you're right. We don't want a lot of those people voting because...
Oh, hell no.
They don't know what they're doing.
No.
You know, is it... which late-night talk show host was it? David Letterman, I think, used to send someone out on the street to ask people questions on things that were in the news. And lately, Bill O'Reilly's sidekick, Waters, has been going out doing that. And they ask people questions like, what's the name of the vice president? And they can't answer it.
Yeah.
Or name your senator, one of your senators. Or how many people are in the Senate? And they say 1,000 or 87 or some off-the-wall number. You know, or, you know, Waters asked somebody how World War II started, how the U.S. was involved in World War II. And I can't remember the answer, but it was something as dumb as the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor or, you know, the North Koreans attacked or, you know. They knew nothing about history, and that is sad.
It is. It is.
You know.
Yeah, there was one of those skits they did. It was O'Reilly's guy, I believe, that was hilarious, where he actually went out and asked people whether they favored Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. Which one did they like better? I was rolling in the floor before that one was over. Anyway, my take on one is, I'm just the opposite of you. You were opposed to it and thought it would pass 60-40. I was in favor of it and thought it would fail 60-40. I really thought that thing was going down by about a 60-40 vote, and I based that only on what my view, and I live in a pretty closed circle when it comes to politics, so... So my world is kind of small in that arena, but yet I do watch, and I watch on Facebook, and I kind of pay attention to what people are saying, even when I don't get involved in the discussions. But my take was all the liberals are going to vote against it. Half the conservatives are going to vote against it. So that gives me at least a 60-40 loss. As it turns out, though, for all of the hype, for all of the talk that we heard from the anti-conservatives, it was the rural areas that carried this thing. I mean, it failed big in the urban areas. It failed big in St. Louis County. It failed big in Kansas City, where a lot of money was spent to get this thing passed. And all we heard the weeks leading up to it from the conservative antis was, well, the farmers don't want this. And yet it was the rural counties, and specifically heavily in the southern rural counties, that this thing carried.
Though I would still maintain, and this has been my experience, the farmers, small farmers that studied it, did not want it. And the farmers who tend not to automatically believe anything they hear from Farm Bureau did not want it. But Farm Bureau spent, and Missouri Farmers Care, the groups backing it, spent over $1 million. Mike Evans and I were at a meeting in West Plains a couple of weeks ago, and 75 people in the meeting, in fact, you may have read the article posted about it on Facebook, a summary written by a West Plains Quill reporter. He did an excellent job of covering both sides. And it kind of got down to most of the people there thought it was a very imperfect bill. They saw lots of problems in it, or not bill, but amendment. But they were saying things like, well, it's a good start. And they were leaving carrying the yard signs for Amendment 1. You know, I still maintain, and I always will from my personal experiences with them, that the big ag-related groups that were for it were lying for a year and a half about it. And if you tell a lie long enough and often enough, people think it's the truth. But, you know, that's what I think happened in the rural areas, honestly. You know, but the small farmers I know that really studied it, and say the feed store I buy feed at, they were against it, you know. So, but it passed, so, hey, live and learn.
There's a guy, we have a visitor here who's texting us back to what you and I were talking about not wanting these people to vote, and I think the person gets the wrong idea. He says any nation that wants to shrink its voting rolls is on the road to ruin. Well, I would agree with that, provided you have an educated voter base. I want to shrink the number of people who don't have a clue and yet go vote.
I don't know whether this is a family radio show. Is it okay if I say dumb A? I want to shrink the number of dumb A's we have out there.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'd like people to pick up a book, read it.
I would be, or exactly, you know, I would be totally for 100% of the eligible people voting if 100% of the eligible people would take the time to understand what's going on. I don't want people whose only idea of what, you know, and this really bothers me. It really bothers me that Americans live on the presidential election cycle.
Yes.
When all of the money is out there, you know, I want people who understand that the president is supposed to mean nothing. I want people who understand that the president of the United States is supposed to be inconsequential to your day-to-day life. That it is your It is your state representative, your state senator, who are supposed to be making the laws that affect your everyday life. And then those 50 states, as a cooperative, elect senators and representatives to drive the country in the areas specified in Article 1, Section 8, and that Washington, D.C. has no business even defining education or marriage or abortion or welfare or Medicaid or Medicare or Social Security. None of those things should emanate from Washington, D.C. Yet we have a voter base that doesn't even get interested till 6 months before the once every 4 year election of the people who aren't even supposed to be governing our lives.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking actually about a speaker we had at our Property Rights Coalition meeting last Monday, right before the election. He's a school teacher in the public schools. And he was talking about Common Core and showed us the history book that is being used now.
Right.
And, you know, facts, according to Common Core, facts are no longer relevant or necessary in history class. When they were discussing the World War II in that chapter, they went over empowerment of women, race relations, a few other things that were important but are not the most important things about World War II. And they totally skipped the bombing of Pearl Harbor. They did have Hiroshima and Nagasaki in there because we did an evil thing and used a nuke, according to Common Core. But I don't even think they got into the death camps the Nazis had. You know, so
they
it's really
it.
No
they got
wonder.
They got into the internment of Japanese Americans, though, didn't they?
Yes, yes, that was in there.
Yeah, I'll bet
but
it was.
But the death
camps
were not.
Right.
And I wonder at times how Americans can be so naive for 1,000 people to demonstrate in favor of Hamas in New York City like they did last week. But maybe that's one of the reasons they're being dumbed down in our education system.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
Pretty. So, but according to the fellow, or to respond to that fellow who texted, I mean, I want to see people get more knowledge, get educated, pick up a book and read, or if they want to watch TV all the time. You know, I watched a really good series HBO made on John Adams recently. It was on Amazon Prime for free, if you have that, on streaming. And it goes over Hamilton, Adams, Jefferson, Washington. And you really get into the separation of powers, and the president was intended to be a much weaker executive than he
is
currently.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, yeah. No, and at that, the president is given a lot of power. I mean, he can veto laws for no reason at all. He doesn't even have to give a reason. All he's got to do is pull out his pen and veto it. Now, there is a check and balance of that veto power, but that's a pretty powerful position in the legislative process. But I am more concerned about the scope of Washington, D.C. This is where we go with state sovereignty. I mean, the whole loss of the idea, the whole forgetting of the idea that the federal government has 8 or 9 specific duties and no more. They are not only not empowered by the Constitution to provide medical care to people, they are forbidden by the Constitution to provide medical care to people. They are not only not allowed to buy food for people, they are forbidden to buy food for people. The Constitution says this is all you can do. And we have so gotten away from that.
Mm-hmm. Very much so, yeah.
So,
what were your opinions on the other amendments?
Yeah, we were going to head down the line. Five, isn't it the next one? Five was the gun one. I was not surprised at all by the margin. I was not surprised at all by the passage. And I was not surprised at all by the demographics. The urban areas did not go. The big urban areas were totally against it, and the rural areas were in favor of it. And that doesn't surprise me. I wasn't surprised at all by five. How about you?
Not at all. The urban areas have the mistaken idea that, violent criminals are going to follow the law. They're concerned about, gangs inside St. Louis or Kansas City carrying weapons, as though a law against it would stop them. Chicago and Washington, D.C. have shown us the folly of that idea. But the rural areas pushed for it, and I think there were enough common sense people in the cities also who wanted to protect Second Amendment rights. I'm glad it passed. I don't think I knew anyone who was not in favor of it other than a couple of friends who were pretty liberal Democrats.
Yeah. Okay, then we have seven, the infamous 3/4-cent sales tax. I was really disappointed by seven. I'm glad it failed. I projected that it would fail. I was really disappointed at the margin. I mean, I thought enough people in this state would say, on both sides, would stand up and say no to that, that I was looking for about a 70-30 there.
It would have been nicer to have a larger margin on the defeat so that the members of the legislature would get the idea.
Right.
Some of them may mistakenly think that they could bring it up again, may try. We need to make it very clear to our legislature members, our House reps and senators, that we don't want this crap. And I like your idea of reforming MoDOT.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm really going to investigate what we need to do to get that whole idea rolling. We might not even get it done in time for this legislative session. I'm going to try, but it's going to take a statewide movement of grassroots groups to get it rolling, and I don't know that we can get it rolling this legislative session. I would love to try to get it rolling this legislative session so that we can start working on an initiative if the legislature doesn't feel inclined to do their job. Then we may have to bring that up as an initiative, and that would take some time and energy as well. We'll see. We'll see. We're definitely going to be investigating getting rolling on that. The other thing that I'm interested in getting rolling, well, we're going to break that news maybe next week or the week after. So you and I have already talked about it, and we'll get down to that. But it's going to be, if we can get it done, if we can get it halfway done, if we fail but get halfway to the goal line, it will be earth-shattering in my mind.
I mentioned it to the leaders of a couple of liberty-minded groups. Just to feel them out, and they're for it, and they will work hard for it.
So. Good. So then we get down to eight. I don't think we need to. I was glad it failed. I'm not surprised it failed, and I don't think anybody is going to miss the share of the lottery tickets that was designated to go to the veterans. Except the only people who will miss that are the people who were going to gain as they shuffled money from the general revenue into their favorite charities to keep the income at the veterans level. Were you done talking about seven?
All done.
Yeah. So that was 8, and then we get down to the last one, 9. I was not surprised by 9, the freedom, the right to privacy amendment. Not a bit surprised. I was happy with it. Everything on the ballot went the way I voted, but not the way I forecasted. 1 did not go the way I forecasted. And 7 was closer than I forecasted.
Everything on the amendments went the way I wanted except 1. So
right.
We were close. Now, we had in a couple of our counties here, we had Republican committee positions that were contested for the first time. In Oregon County, at least for the first time in county history, and I think in Howell County as well, and I understand Wright in Texas County had some. And Christian County, I believe. And I heard that Tom Taylor, who is with the Property Rights Coalition in Christian County, won and is on the committee now. And John Dollarhite on the Christian
right,
County.
Right, John. I saw John won, right.
In Howland, Oregon County, and I'll go ahead and come out of the closet, and if anybody from the parties in those counties are listening, I'll probably be on their bad list. But I think the Rhinos won. And the good guys lost. And not that there was anything bad about some of the folks in Oregon County. Very nice people running. It's just that we have a chairman there who follows the party machine in Jeff City. And, you know, he's one of these guys who decides to be against something because of who is for it. He
yeah.
doesn't care for
yeah.
Rick Sinkfeld. So if Rick Sinkfeld is for it, he's against it. You know, he did not vote for Congress the way the majority of the members of the committee did at that time, and yet for some reason our committee acts like a bridge club with nobody playing cards, and they were pretty much going along with whatever he wanted other than just a couple of us that were on there. We were hoping to get a few more liberty-minded people on. They lost, including my compadre, so I am now John the Baptist crying alone in the wilderness, and the committee will continue to be worthless, but we have a property rights coalition group in this county. We'll continue to work with that. And in Howell County, Don Eagleman and Marilyn Slack, no relation to me, very great lady, they both lost, and I was very disappointed to see that. And it looks as though the party machine won. So they'll probably continue to do something I think is atrocious and have 1 committee meeting every 2 years, the minimum required by law. They're doing nothing to expand the party. Oregon County probably be the same way, doing nothing to expand the party, get more people involved. On the other hand, I've often said I admire what Texas County has done, their Republican committee, and opening membership up and just really expanding the numbers of people who are active there. And I was hoping to see Howell and Oregon both do something like that. So, Vince Finelli, by the way, I think he won committee in Wright County. Talk show host out of Springfield area. And,
yeah.
Liberty.
Where's he from? I didn't realize he was from Wright County.
I'm not exactly sure where he lives. I know he's in Wright somewhere. But I understand that he is on his committee now. So good for him. And he and the Dollar Heights are friends.
Yeah, oh, well, that doesn't surprise me a bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. And in Lawrence County, I'm not sure how the committees went. I'm not a Republican, so I don't keep up with those things. But the Republican Party's attempt to unseat our friend Mike Moon fell a little short. Mike will be back in Jefferson City, we hope, after a successful general election. Nothing can be taken for granted. It is a heavily Republican stronghold, but still, things can happen. We'll hope that Mike is back in Jefferson City. He's one of the good ones, and in addition to being one of the good ones, he's our kind of information conduit here at the State Sovereignty Hour, joining us during session every Friday night to give us a lowdown on what's happened in Jefferson City that week and what's upcoming and what we need to be doing and who we need to be calling. So so we're happy for Mike. We're happy for us because of what Mike's able to do, and it's good for everybody, in my opinion, to have an actual eyewitness to what goes on, filling us all in on how it goes. And I like Mike.
When I first met Mike, it was at the Firearms Freedom Symposium in Springfield a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
When he was running in the special election. But he was there because he's very active in his Property Rights Coalition chapter.
Right.
And he is the first PRC member to become a state rep that I'm aware of.
I met him first on the Greene County Courthouse steps when he announced his run against Billy Long. And was very impressed at that time. I went down there just to kind of have a little chat with him, get to meet him, let him know what Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a fairly new organization at that time, was all about, and kind of maybe vet him a little bit for the group and see if because we were very unhappy with Billy Long already, we already wanted him out, and we were looking for a candidate we could get behind to do that. So I went on down there and met him for that announcement, and was very impressed at that first short meeting. Talked to him several times after that on some things. Interviewed him at length on this show in conjunction with that run against Billy Long. Was very, very impressed by that almost 2-hour interview. I've been you know what I got here. Here's I gave, ages ago, 12, 13 years ago, when I graduated from high school, the church that I attended had a tradition of giving all the graduates a Bible with their name engraved on the front cover. You've seen it with the little gold letters on the front cover of the Bible. And I kept that Bible and I gave that here 10 or 11 years ago to my grandson. And that's the last I saw of it. I got a call or a text here a little while ago, just to tell you a funny story, and it was from Mike Moon. And Mike says, "Did you leave a Bible at High Street Baptist Church?" And I said, "No, I've never attended High Street Baptist Church." And he said, "Well, there's a Bible here at High Street that came out of a bunch of books in a closet, and it's got your name on the front of it." And I didn't even remember having given it to my grandson. But I thought and I thought and I thought, how in the world? And then I remembered that there was a period of time some time ago when my daughter and grandson attended High Street Baptist Church. And at that point, it just bounced back into my mind that I had given him that Bible. And so I called her up, and sure enough, he had misplaced it some time ago and just never had the nerve to tell me. And there it is. So that's just my funny little story about Mike Moon.
And that shows he's observant.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good to have somebody in Jeff City who's observant. A lot of them are blind.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Mike Moon's going to join us tonight, and we're going to start laying the groundwork for getting back on track with the State Sovereignty Program. We'll be back right after this break.
For 7 years I dwelt in the loose palace of exile, playing strange games with the girls of the island. Now I have come again to the land of the fair and the strong and the wise. Brothers and sisters of the pale forest, children of night, who among you will run with the hunt? Now night arrives with her purple legion. Retire now to your tents and to your dreams. Tomorrow we enter the town of my birth. I want to be ready.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have, because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families, and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the household, then we start making...
2 days that can save your life. The Preppers and Patriots Expo, August 16th and 17th at the Doubletree Hotel in Springfield, Missouri. Learn about long-term storage food, water filtration, solar power, firearms for survival, wilderness survival, and ways to protect you and your family during an emergency. Vendor tables still available. The phone number to call, 417-264-2435. 417-264-2435. PreppersandPatriots.net.
They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
I didn't see any method at all.
I wonder if you knew they would turn your bad deeds into good. Paint you as a modern Robin Hood.
They told me.
Okay, you didn't realize that our kids actually belong to all of us, did you? That they don't belong to their parents.
Thank you, Hillary, for letting us know that.
Yeah.
you know.
So.
Go ahead. I was talking about the frightening experience of listening to this public school teacher talk to us about Common Core. That's one of the ideas of Common Core, and that is really. That's something that we're going to have to get behind and beat at the state level, but the federal government is rigging the game. If a state rejects Common Core, then they fine them for not following through on the No Child Left Behind Act.
Right.
Through some kind of you know, strange situation they've got there, and none of the states want to give up that money that they shouldn't have to give up anyway. I need to research this more, but I'm really bothered by what's going on with this Common Core standard.
We need to get some regular scheduled time here, and I'll work on this in the next week. Even I'm making myself a note right now. We need to get some real quality scheduled time with Gretchen, or one of her cohorts who can come to us and talk about that in an educated way. I mean, in a way that could actually educate you and me and the listening audience. I'm not as familiar with it as I should be. I'm familiar enough with it to know that we need to be opposed to it. And exactly for what you said. I mean, it is all about that whole thing where we need to get away from the notion that kids belong to their parents and that kids belong to the whole community. So we're going to be getting back now to our role here at the State Sovereignty Hour in and promoting, educating, and talking to people about state sovereignty. To a great deal of the time, it is us preaching to the choir. I mean, the 20,000 people who listen here are very much, are generally very much in tune to wanting the federal government marginalized, to wanting the federal government downsized, to wanting the federal government out of their lives, to getting rid of the intrusions of the federal government. But still there are large numbers of people, Mike, who talk that game but don't really understand the basics of state sovereignty. You know, the founders went to Philadelphia with a jealous zeal for protecting the sovereignty of their state. I mean, it was they entered this federal contract knowing that there are certain pieces of their own state's sovereignty that they had to surrender. The Articles of Confederation had failed miserably. It was do this or die. And so they came from states that were, you know, in the Articles of Confederation, the federal government was totally powerless. The United States was on the verge of bankruptcy. They couldn't pay their debts because the federal government could not extract from the states their share of the payment. The country was on the verge at that point already of civil war over the borders between the states and ownership of the expanded territories to the west and south. We had one state charging another state for use of the St. Lawrence Seaway. yet any agreement that was made under the Articles of Confederation had to be agreed to by 100% of the states, which was never going to happen if you were arguing over who owned some of the western territories that were just being expanded into. The state that wanted ownership could veto just single-handedly anything that came out that didn't favor them. If you wanted to restrict one state charging another state for use of an interstate waterway, well, any one state could put the kibosh on that. The states had to be in 100% agreement on everything or nothing was done. So it wasn't working. It just wasn't working. And yet, it is the state sovereignty. It is the ownership by the sovereign people of their local government that was being most jealously guarded by these people as they met in Philadelphia. They brought their own state constitutions with them in the hope that the federal constitution would be modeled after what their state was doing. They demanded the Fugitive Slave Act, which nobody thinks was good, which nobody today thinks wasn't an evil thing, but that was all about the southern states saying, we're not giving the cooperative of the states any control over this issue. This is our sovereign power here we're talking about within our state. So it is with that background that we look at what the federal government is allowed to do. And then we look down at our state and we look at what's happened through history. When the federal government first started off, it was understood by everyone, for example, that the Second Amendment didn't apply to the state of Missouri. Let's pretend the state of Missouri was one of the original 13. The state of Missouri could the people of the state of Missouri, as sovereign people, working through their sovereign local electorate, were perfectly capable of establishing a religion. Many states, after the Constitution, had a state religion. Several states kept a tight rein on the press. Several states, even though they denied the power to the federal government, there were two states that put people in prison for not paying their debts. And the earliest Supreme Court ruled that the state of Tennessee could restrict people from owning firearms. But then we got down to the Progressive Era. Well, before that, the Reconstruction, greatly expanded the federal government, and then the Progressive Era, which greatly expanded the federal government, and we are at a point today where we look at Roy Blunt, and we look at Claire McCaskill, and we look at Billy Long, and we look at this clown down in the South there who bought that election from the Democrats, Thad Cochran. And we look at Mitch McConnell, and we look at Boehner, and we say, I mean, we have to, if we're going to get this right, and this is something that we have trouble in my mind, my coming to grips with. We have to be ready to say it's over. It's over at the federal level. And we will never, ever get the federal government back by finding enough Ted Cruz's to send to Washington, D.C. It won't happen.
No. You mentioned Reconstruction, you know. Documents written prior to Reconstruction, when they refer to the United States, say the United States are.
Right.
After Reconstruction, they said the United States is.
Right.
It became singular afterwards.
A unibody, right.
Because of the expansion of federal power.
Yeah. And God bless him. God bless him for what he did. Abraham Lincoln was a great guy. We would never, ever have gotten to the point of actually fighting this thing out to some fruition. And he stood fast, but my God, Mike, he was the grandfather of expansion of the federal government.
And
its power.
You know, like Lincoln or dislike him, it is a simple fact that a great deal of what he did was illegal and unconstitutional.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so we reach a point where we say, what can we do? What can we do to get back to where we were? Well, there's only one thing we can do. And that one thing is to find a way in our state, and hopefully a sufficient number of other states will join us. And there are, I mean, as much as Missouri is a bellwether state in many, many things, there are some states that are 50 yards ahead of us toward the goal line in this particular area. But we need to work on our state and not worry about the other states. Hope that we can get brothers and sisters out there in other states. But we need to work on our state, and we need a state that will have the fortitude to stand up and say to the federal government, no, no more. We're in charge. You are not in charge. Here's the way it's going to be. You've got this box that you belong in. Here it is, defined. And by God, I'll tell you, the more and more I have discussions with several people who like to discuss these kinds of things, the more and more convinced I become, Mike, that you open up this U.S. Constitution and you read it, and you have to have at least 6 degrees not to be able to just read it and understand what the hell it says. Once you get 3 or 4 degrees under your belt, then suddenly you don't understand what the hell, you know, what it means. You start trying to ferret out some ulterior motive. Some, I mean, the words are clear. And
it becomes a living document.
And for us uneducated people, I mean, even us uneducated folk, we can read the Federalist Papers. We can read the debates that went on. Madison kept very good notes of the day-to-day events at the convention. We can read the letters that went back and forth between these guys during ratification. We can read what the anti-federalist Patrick Henry and his crew thought. And it doesn't. It basically is high school civics. What does the Constitution say? That's high school civics. And only when you've been to at least three law schools and can that all become confusing to you. I'm convinced. So there it is. There it is. There's this simple little document that says to the federal government, here are the things that you were commissioned to do. You are a cooperative of the states. You are not an entity unto your own. You are nothing more than a contract between us 50. You exist in no other realm than as an agreement between us 50, and we run the show, you don't. When we can get to that point, then we can do all of the things that need to be done to get our government back.
And the question is then, how do we get there?
Well, I have some ideas, and I've talked about this with... I'll tell you, I like Keith Carmichael. I like the idea of a convention. I was calling for an Article 5 convention years before Mark Levin wrote a book. But I think that an Article 5 convention is our last bullet, Mike. And I don't think we can waste it. And I think the only way not to waste that last bullet is to have the amendment. You don't just have a convention for the sake of having a convention. The convention isn't the end-all and be-all. Just having a convention isn't the end. You don't even meet until you have firmly in place and the support for the necessary amendments in words written down to do it. Now you're going to have a convention for the very purpose of discussing this and debating this and knowing what you know. When the guys met in Philadelphia, they brought with them the basic structure of the ideas of what they wanted to do. I don't think we have this meeting without three or four amendments that will do the job. Written, prepared, ready to debate, ready to roll, and with sufficient support behind them to know that they're going to come out of that convention. I think anything else is folly.
And those amendments would be, let's see, revoke the 16th and 17th?
Yes, yeah. And okay. The state repeal amendment, which we'll be talking to Lloyd Sloan about. Those are my three. Those are my three. Repeal 17, I rank that as number one, at regaining state sovereignty. Some of my friends disagree with me. Some of them think some of the other ones are a little bit more important. I rank at the bottom of the list and almost in the garbage can. Term limits, balanced budget amendments, all these things that are big newsmakers and the ones that people talk about. What the hell difference does it make whether you balance the budget when you're taxing people at 50% of everything that we produce in this country?
A balanced budget amendment without discipline and with
yeah.
them spending like drunken sailors
yeah.
would force a raise of taxes.
Right. Further, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I like the idea of term limits for representatives coupled with repeal of the 17th and direct appointment of senators by the state legislatures, because I think those two things would bring back discipline to D.C. because it would get rid of professional politicians for the most part.
Well, I agree with that. And if we want to do that in the state of Missouri with our representative, I think that's fine. And I think all 50 states probably, when they see that work, would get behind it. But it is not limiting the federal government to write a federal law that says we in the state of Missouri can't send whoever we want to Washington, D.C.
Okay.
That's my thinking is this. Another federal law that dictates who we can and cannot elect next year to the House of Representatives is not the way to go.
Well, if we look back in history, we did have a few career politicians, you might call them, Henry Clay and Calhoun. What was Calhoun's first name? Seems like those guys are around for about 40 years and continue to be either appointed to the Senate or elected to the House. But most representatives through the 1800s, the early years, were like Davy Crockett. They served one or two terms and they went home.
Do you know, why was that?
Well, they weren't getting pensions as they automatically get now for serving one day.
Not only were they not getting pensions, but the darn job didn't pay very well. They had to go back and take care of the farm. They had to go back and keep the shop running because they still had a family to feed. And I think you could limit terms like that. In fact, my proposal for a repeal of the 17th Amendment stipulates that not only does the state legislature appoint the state's two senators, but they pay them. There's no reason that the people going to Washington, D.C. to represent the state of Missouri ought to be paid out of the federal largesse. They're going to Washington, D.C. to represent the state of Missouri. My God, they ought to be paid by the state of Missouri.
And then I think we'd see some of them in reasonable efficiency apartments or staying at a YMCA.
Yeah, sure.
Instead of buying mansions.
Yeah.
You know, how many senators do we have now? Probably most or all who are more comfortable in D.C. have nicer homes in D.C. than they have.
Live there 12 months a year, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the complaints about Joanne Emerson was that, you know, she was a representative, but she was getting a huge salary. She was elected for that final term, I think, knowing she was going to resign to become queen of all lobbyists.
Yeah,
but that increased her pension by being elected again, serving one more day of that term. But she apparently had a house with her husband in St. Louis, who was a Democratic lobbyist, and then a nicer house in D.C. and just a very small place in Cape Girardeau to maintain her residency where she in the district she supposedly represented.
Right.
You know, that kind of crap nobody likes.
Right. You know, I would be in favor. Here's something I would be in favor of, and I've heard this discussed by some people. I haven't put a lot of thought into how the logistics would work, but there is no reason, given today's technology, given the fact that you and I are on a radio show, co-hosting a radio show together, and that you're in Thayer and I'm in Springfield, given the secure means that we have to teleconference with our doctor, there's no reason these people even need to be in Washington, D.C. There's no reason why our senator's office shouldn't be in the State House in Jefferson City and our representative's office that he goes to, he or she goes to, 10 hours a day, hadn't ought to be right here in the home district. And those people maybe need to go to Washington, D.C. to have a week of committee meetings and maybe go up there again once a year for the State of the Union address so everyone can stand up and applaud. And then the rest of the time, they'd ought to work and vote from the home office.
like that idea, but then someone would say, well, there's no socialization. They can't get to know their fellow representatives. But then again, maybe that's a good thing.
Well, maybe it is a good thing, but there, you know, there and on the other side of that, there is something to be said about conversation and open, deliberative debate between people in the same room on subjects of extreme importance. And if the government would limit itself to the things that it is empowered to do by Article 1, Section 8, you would find, again, that they are things of extreme importance. You know, whether or not to declare war on Iraq is a thing that ought to be debated openly and face-to-face. So, tell me what you think of all that.
You know, well, I was thinking about your kind of remote or virtual representative meeting, and I like a lot of things about that, but I was thinking, as hard a time as I give him over some issues, my Congressman Jason Smith, I have been very happy to see him in person, in committee, grilling the Secretary of the Interior a few times, and the head of the Federal Park Service a few times over issues here. And so, you know, there's something to be said, as you say, for the face-to-face matter. But I'm for more openness. I like the fact that C-SPAN is there recording everything.
Oh, I do too, yeah.
I wish they were doing more of it. You know, so, and then a lot of folks simply don't trust computers and electronics. And we'd have to overcome that public distrust. I think I'd lean towards sending them to D.C., having them meet in person, but just, you know, more like it used to be, where they go up there for a few months, get some work done, and come back.
Yeah.
And then don't live in the lap of luxury while they're there. Go there to do the job and come home.
Well,
to their district. You know, I still, you know, I keep thinking of the mansions that many of them are living in, and they're able to afford those mansions because of the huge salaries we give them now.
Right.
And the huge amounts of money that they raise to campaign on, much more than they're ever paid per year. You know, and then some of them get out of office. Well, the great pensions while they get out, but some of them get out of office and immediately become lobbyists. Now, I have a problem with restricting lobbying afterwards because of the First Amendment. But I don't like it. I don't like seeing someone turn around and start lobbying the agency he was with immediately.
Well, I don't have a problem with lobbying. I mean, and this is something I pointed out, and you and I somewhat disagree on. But, you know, Missouri Grassroots Coalition is a lobbyist.
My problem is with the full-time paid lobbyists.
My problem is with the money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the money.
You know, Ron Calzone is a lobbyist, but he's not paid.
Sure he is. Yeah. Yeah.
Volunteering.
Absolutely. Yeah.
With all the calls I've made to Jeff City, I think you could call me a lobbyist, but nobody paid me for it. In fact, it was taking time away from my business to do it.
Sure.
But, again, I went to a meeting on Amendment 1 a while back, and the Farm Bureau representative holding the meeting was a paid lobbyist, makes a really good salary,
right,
in Jeff City. And I felt like the deck was stacked against me. You know, so, yeah, the money becomes a problem. And then, you know, every time they've tried to solve it, the money problem, it was something that I believed was a First Amendment violation, like McCain-Feingold.
Yeah.
In fact, didn't they decide it was a First Amendment violation eventually?
Yes.
The McCain-Feingold Act. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the whole
argument where corporations are people first rose its ugly head.
Citizens United for that, but McCain-Feingold was the amount, regulating the amount of money that could be spent in a campaign by individuals. I think money is equivalent to speech. You know, I work, I earn money, I use it to buy radio airtime or a newspaper ad, that's free speech. I don't have a problem with seeing money as speech. But, you know, I have a problem with the abuse, and I think if we actually had a little bit of shame brought back into the arena for some of the actions of some of the professional politicians and some of the lobbyists, maybe they wouldn't do it. I don't know. How do we shame them?
Well, you know, we have... I don't know. I think you don't get to shame them until you... And here we are back to this whole voting population thing. Until you have a voting population, at least that percentage of the population that is going to vote, who cares where that person's money came from? Because it's certainly available. It's available to everyone to see how much money Monsanto gave to this guy and how much money DuPont gave to that guy and how much money ConAgra gave to that guy and how much money the Koch brothers gave to that guy and how much money George Soros gave to that guy. That's all out in the open, but people just don't care. They don't care.
No, they don't.
And so there need be no shame on the part of the politicians if people don't care. And I think that's a problem. And until you can, and I think that getting back to the state sovereignty level, I think that will make people care more. I think people will feel more ownership when, you know, we can sit here all day long and have the discussion with people over whether gays should be married. And we can have the discussion all day long with people over whether abortion should be legal or illegal and whether there should be a right to farm or whether there should be Common Core. But when we get those fights out of Washington, D.C. and into Jefferson City where they belong, people don't feel any ownership of the outcome of the battle. They just feel infringed by the outcome of the battle. They just feel subverted to this big monster system. But when Cynthia Davis and I can go to Jefferson City, make our points on outlawing abortion, and one of us come away with a quote-unquote victory after the representatives of the sovereign people of the state of Missouri have come to some decision on what the will of the people of the state of Missouri is, people will feel more ownership. And when they feel more ownership, well, in the first place, when we get to that point where Washington, D.C. is deciding whether to declare war, monitoring the counterfeiting of the currency, managing the interstate highways, managing the interstate waterways and interstate commerce as it was intended, trying people for treason, and there's four more. I can't even remember what they are now right off the top of my head. But when that's all Washington, D.C. does, what the hell is there to lobby for?
Mm-hmm. That's true. Is the Postal Service in with one of those things that you...
Yeah, well, postal roads, yeah.
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 Benjamin Franklin was the originator of the U.S. Postal Service, and
right.
I've always believed that was valid. Though I will upset some of the rural folks in that I think they should cancel Saturday mail service and close an awful lot of these little post offices around here.
Yeah. Oh,
but,
yeah. But, yeah, I mean, when the federal government is back in its box, when the federal government is doing what it's supposed to be doing, what is there to lobby for in Washington, D.C.? Now, it will bring the lobbyists to Jefferson City, but we can control that as a state. As a people, we can say, Eric, what are you doing up there, you know? I see here in the Missouri Ethics Committee that you took $555 in your last run from some guy who's trying to, you know, get you to vote to build a ballpark, to finance a ballpark in Kansas City. I'm concerned about that. And we own that. We own that.
You know, I was very disappointed in the last legislative session that the Second Amendment Preservation Act did not pass, the revised version.
Right.
Because I thought that was a step towards the state declaring sovereignty.
Right.
Stopping the federal government from enforcement of some federal laws that I believe are unconstitutional. You also mentioned which states are actually going to stand up and start doing things. I don't know how popular it is in Missouri, but, you know, Colorado with their marijuana legalization has in essence done that
yeah.
on one issue.
Yeah. Well,
and it's still a federal law violation out there, but they don't enforce it.
And Wisconsin has recently put its foot down on organized labor, especially in the organized labor in the public sector.
Mm-hmm.
I would much rather see that than this thing you call right to work. I would much rather just see us outlaw public sector unions. There's just something inherently bad about that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that includes teachers, firemen, policemen, anyone who's garbage collectors, if your city pays the garbage collectors.
Well, and as far as the teachers go, years ago, they did not have a union per se. What was it, back in the 70s, the Missouri State Teachers Association was a professional association. Teachers then actually looked down on the idea of a union. That was not a professional organization. The National Education Association had been a professional association, but they started to think of themselves as a union. And I recall my junior year of high school, they actually created a Missouri National Education Association, or MNEA, to compete with the MSTA, the original teachers group, which oddly enough had been one of the organizations that founded the NEA to start with. And I knew some teachers who belonged to both groups. Some were trying to straddle the fence. I know one teacher once who told me that he preferred the MSTA 90% of the time, but the NEA he knew would actually back him in court if he ever actually had to go to court against the school system. You know, but that was way back then, and now I think the NEA has evolved so much that it's you can legitimately call it a union today.
Yeah.
And then
I think the second step after you take state sovereignty back and reduce the role of Washington, D.C., the second step in restricting lobbying or without outlawing it, making it less than attractive, is repeal of the 16th. And a fair tax. I mean, I just threw out a number just for rhetoric, but clearly more than 50% of all lobbying has to do with tax laws, tax breaks, and breaks given to in the form of corporate welfare through the tax code.
Mm-hmm. And manipulation of behavior.
Yep.
Through taxes.
Yeah. And so I believe that killing the income tax and instituting a fair tax is a huge, huge step. That and state getting state sovereignty back, putting the federal government back in its box to where they're not in a position to help or hinder through regulation or tax some special interest. I believe those two things take care of the lobbying problem.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I like that idea. So how do we get this implemented?
Well, I believe we push forward with this convention of the states thing with the caveat that we go there with these amendments in mind, with these amendments backed, with these amendments supported, and forget all the little stuff. I mean, go after the big stuff. Go straight for the juggler of the federal government. The term limits aren't the juggler vein of the federal government. A balanced budget isn't the jugular vein of the Fed. Believe me, if the United States Senate is composed of two people from each state who are paid by their state, who are appointed by their state, and who are there for no other reason than to protect the interest of their state, there's going to be a balanced budget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the United States Senate is composed of a group of people who are in Washington, D.C. to protect the interest of their state, there is no Obamacare. The states didn't want it.
Mm-hmm. 35, 36 states didn't reject the state exchange plan, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, 27 states sued the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Among them, Missouri.
Yes. So, the third one, of course, is the state repeal amendment, which we're going to talk at length about with Lloyd next week. But basically, it says, after all is said and done, 50% of the states that represent 50% of the population can void any federal act. Period. I mean, anything. They can repeal anything that comes out of the federal judiciary. They can repeal anything that comes out of the federal legislature. They can repeal anything that comes out of executive order. So half of the states, as long as that half represents half the population, which is exactly the same thing as a veto in the House of Representatives. You have to have 51%, and that 51% would, of course, in and of itself represent half of the American people because of the way the House of Representatives is proportioned according to population.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, and that even in and of itself wouldn't be an easy thing to do. But if something came out that was so universally bad for the states or universally bad for the people, then it could be done. And I think those three things in conjunction with each other, I believe, solve maybe not all the problems, but 99.5%.
Well, Mike Moon was the one who sponsored the Convention of States bill in the Missouri House.
He was.
Okay.
He was.
I wonder if he's planning on doing it again in the next session,
provided
he is reelected.
Yeah, I think he would be glad to. It's really going to be up to the convention of the state's people who they approach on that. I'm sure they'll approach Mike first, and they'll work all that out. We'll see. We'll see. There's going to be some politics involved there. Mike pissed off an awful lot of people in the last session. So,
was there a companion bill in the Senate?
No. There was a carrier in the Senate all ready to go as soon as they got it over from the House, but they did start that in the House. Now, I understand, after talking to some people, that it might be better to start those things in the Senate. I still don't know or understand why, but we'll just see what happens. I know SRA, the State Repeal Amendment, was introduced in the Senate last year. And COS was introduced in the House. Neither one got out of committee and to the floor for a vote. But
I understand.
These things,
I understand. COS got out of committee, but Mr. Deal did not allow it to go to a reading in front of the full House.
Well.
The same with Mike's food freedom bill.
Yeah, COS. What happened to COS was, and there's something a little bit goofy about this too. But what happened? COS was voted out of committee, and then I really don't know what Deal had. I don't know for a fact what Deal had to do with this. I have my feelings, but. At the point that it got out of committee, somebody said, oops, there's something wrong with the title of this bill. The title has to read this way. So then they sent it back to the Rules Committee, where it had to be retitled, and then it had to go through, well, yeah, and that it was just all really a mess. I mean, it had a good hearing. And it passed out of the committee, and before it could go to the floor, somebody looked at it and said, oops, there's something wrong with the title here.
I just conspiracy-minded, or does that seem odd and suspicious to you?
Well, yeah, it does to me. And I'll never be convinced that somebody didn't have something to do with that, but... when we get Mike on, we'll ask about the details of that, and I just don't remember. Okay.
It'll be interesting to find out.
We're going to come back here in just a minute, and we're going to talk about some other misunderstandings about state sovereignty that really go right to the heart of the issue.
Calling all you angels, and I won't give up, you don't give up, I won't give up, you don't give up, I won't give up, you don't give up, I won't give up, you don't give up.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
The Archives.
All right, we're back. Now, this is something that we're going to spend a lot of time dissecting, because for all of the time we've spent talking about state sovereignty and what it means, state sovereignty is still very, very misunderstood by some core people in the liberty, on the liberty side of the house. The American experiment, the experiment that we began in Philadelphia, had not a thing to do with recognizing inalienable rights. Now, that strikes some people as odd, that what the founders did that was so unique and so different was not recognizing that people have rights. That steeped back in the philosophies that the founders had studied for centuries. There were volumes of books that the philosophers were brought up with, that the founders were brought up with, that talked about these rights, that talked about the rights that people have, that talked about the inalienability of rights, that talked about the rights given to mankind by the Creator. This wasn't some new and unique idea of the founders. Here's what was unique and new. Throughout human history, and by necessity, as we became more and more civilized, some entity has to say, you can exercise this right and you can't exercise that. Or sure, you have a God-given right to go out and pee in the street. All right? You have a God-given right to sit, you know, the example I like to use with the guy who likes to argue this very point with me every time we meet. You have a God-given right to sit in your front yard naked while the kids walk by on the way to school if you want to. You know, God didn't sew clothes. He put us in the garden without a stitch of clothing on. At some level, some entity has to say, you can't or you can. I have no problem with the people of Springfield, Missouri, telling me, as much as I want beehives in my 1.5-acre backyard, that I can't have beehives. If that's their decision, I'll live with it, because some level of society has to be able to corporately say, this is okay and that's not okay. The beauty of the American experiment was in recognizing what that entity is. The uniqueness of the American experiment was the determination that only we, a sovereign people, together, governing ourselves, can be the level that makes those decisions. You can or can't sit in your front room naked. You can have a gun, but you can't have a nuclear bomb. You know, you can say whatever you want, whenever you want, but you can't slander someone. You can't tell lies about a person and expect to get away with it. That ruins their life or ruins their reputation. That's what state sovereignty is all about. And that's what some people have trouble coming to grips with. That was the argument. State sovereignty was the argument in Amendment 1, in my mind. Well, you know, and they made a huge, huge mistake, in my mind, when they put right to on the front of it. Maybe the Farmer Protection Act, maybe the Agricultural Beauty Act, maybe America the Beautiful Act. I don't care what you want to call it. But the minute you call it right to do something, you're going to get a large percentage of liberty-loving people who say, oh, I'm against it. I already have a right. I have a God-given right to do that. You don't have, the government doesn't get to tell me I have a right to do this. The government doesn't get to tell me I have a right to do that. I have a right. I have a right. I have a right. You have the right that the sovereign people, you have a right, yes, but you get to exercise that right within the limits defined by the sovereign people who share this area with you. I don't have a problem with that. You know, what's this stuff about local government regulation? I don't have a problem with that. By God, if there's going to be some regulation, that's where it ought to be. You know, if someone is going to say you can't throw unfiltered pig manure into the James River, that person ought to be the people who live at the James River, the people who live in this area.
I get where you're coming from there philosophically. Yeah. One of the reasons I don't live in Springfield anymore is because I did not like some of the local laws.
Exactly.
Aesthetics, you know, outlawing. Do you remember several years ago when they outlawed the portable signs that were popular for a while?
Yeah, yeah.
It was because of aesthetics. The wives of some of the council members thought they were ugly. But that was also during a slight recession. And they were good for business, and outlawing them not only hurt business as an advertising method, but it put several people out of business. I had a friend who made those signs. And, you know, to me, that was just totally wrong. But I'm not arguing they didn't have the legal right to do it as an entity. You know, but hey, you know, I wouldn't blame one of those sign guys for leaving Springfield, taking his business elsewhere.
There were
quite a few stupid, picky little ordinances they kept passing that irritated me, and my blood pressure went down when I moved out into a county that didn't do those things. Springfield has a dog-at-large ordinance, which is understandable. But, you know, on your car insurance, they ask if you've had a wreck in the last 3 years. In bankruptcy court, they go back 7 years. The dog-at-large ordinance in Springfield goes back forever. I had a dog get loose and got a ticket for it 35 years ago. I had it happen again 25 years ago and then 20 years ago. You know, I had a beagle who kept getting off his chain. But, you know, you never wind up having it stop, and it was hitting the point where they're going to give me a $500 fine if my beagle got loose again. Plus the fact that the dog catchers are not that pleasant. I got the hell out of there. You know, I'm much happier now.
Well, you know, and the problem, it goes right back to exactly what we've been talking about since the first 5 minutes of the show. And that is, you cannot extract full appreciation of the sovereignty of the state until you have people who recognize their own individual sovereignty and the responsibility associated with it. I mean, it may be legally and philosophically right for the group of people who call themselves the city of Springfield, represented by these seven people who sit over there in the city hall on Boonville, to say, you can't have beehives in your backyard, but it isn't right. It isn't right. And when people, individual people, understand their own sovereignty to the point that they don't allow that kind of thing to happen anymore, that they don't allow those representatives to make those sign laws anymore, then it's all going to work. Hello, Carl.
Sorry about that. That's one reason I don't live in Springfield anymore.
So, Hello, caller. Okay. That is, and we're going to explore that. We're going to explore that philosophically. We're going to explore it legally. We're going to explore it hopefully with some people who will join in to the discussion on both sides of the issue.
And Dave, may I vent about something since we were talking about leaving an area when it irritates you with some of the laws that it made quite legally. With the Preppers and Patriots Expo, I would think that the city of Springfield would be grateful that there was an event going on that was going to circulate money within the city, people selling things, buying things, eating lunch and breakfast at restaurants, renting rooms in a hotel or several motels and hotels. And that really should be enough for them. But I got a call the other day from the city, and each of the vendors has to pay a $5 permit fee to the city of Springfield. And I have to pay a $25 promotion fee. And, you know, that's not a lot of money. I guess it's just the principle that really irritates me, because the city of Springfield hasn't done anything to earn it.
Right.
And it feels like extortion.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, we're winding down. I don't want to get away tonight before we get a plug in for our sisters on Tuesday night of every week. Cynthia Davis hosts Missouri Grassroots Radio with the. Family-oriented hour that I can't even remember the name of right now. I'm so sorry. Homefront. Exactly right. Cynthia Davis with Homefront on Tuesdays. Wednesday night is the Culture Vigilante with Lisa Payne Nager. Soon we're going to be adding a show, a host, either on Sunday or some other open day being negotiated now. I'm holding back on who that is until we actually get that sorted out. But you'll be happy. I'm going to be back with Mike Slack tomorrow night. We're going to detail the state sovereignty thing. We're going to lay out where we're going from here. Next week when we come back, we will be, I guess, Mike Moon. Got tied up. I knew he had a thing going tonight and wasn't going to make it at his usual prompt 7 o'clock, but he will be with us in the future, in the near future, we're going to have Lloyd Sloan next week talk about the state repeal amendment. We're going to have Keith Carmichael. Next week, Mike is not going to be with us because he's going to be busy hosting Patriots and... I want you to tell us about that in about 9 minutes, Mike.
Ah, well, that's a lot of time. Well, the Preppers and Patriots Expo will be at the Doubletree Hotel next Saturday and Sunday, the 16th and 17th, from 9 to 6. $10 admission is good for the entire weekend. We'll put a stamp on your wrist like we used to do in college at the parties. And you can stay all day Saturday, come back, stay all day Sunday. We have a lot of good speakers, Doc Bones and Nurse Amy on survival medicine, Don McPherson on home remedies and what to do when there's no pharmacy, Dr. Jim Caesar from Branson demonstrating suturing, Doug Breathauer will be there with his firewood-powered pickup truck, John Davis with an RV that he calls the ultimate bug-out vehicle. He said he and his wife can live in it for a year with what he's got in there. folks selling freeze-dried food, long-term storage food of different types. The Dollar Heights will be there with Berkey water filters and body armor, which everybody needs, and I'm quite serious about that. I think everybody does need it. And let's see. We will have several political organizations, among them, as I mentioned, the Missouri Militia, the Oath Keepers, the Missouri Precinct Project, the Constitution Party, which was the first organization to sign up for the event, and they've been very, very supportive. The Libertarians will be there in spirit, and we have the Alliance, Missouri Alliance for Freedom, the Convention of States Project with Keith Carmichael, so you can speak to him in person. We have another group I just found out existed that's called the Missouri Citizen Militia. So there are two militia groups in Missouri. And this one is based in the Springfield area. And one of their members was on television out at the Bundy Ranch in Nevada. I remember seeing him when they were accusing Clive Bundy of being racist. This fella is black and from Missouri and said that was not the case. He didn't believe Mr. Bundy was a racist. And I'm hoping that he will actually be there with the group. I seem like a smart guy, and I'd like to chat with him a little bit. Vince Finelli will be there speaking on, I think the title of his talk is How Deep Do the Lies Go? It's on some things the federal government has said and done that he has a problem with. John Moore, the Liberty Man, speaking on climate change. Joyce Riley from the Power Hour on the Veterans Administration, Veterans Health. Beth Ann from CSC Talk Radio will be there. And, you know, a lot of folks used to listen to Derry Brownfield on his radio show. Beth Ann was his assistant, took the show over 3 or 4 years ago when Derry passed away. And she has made it her own. She's done a wonderful job. And she's good friends with Sheriff Richard Mack. And I think it'd be a pleasure for the folks to come out there and speak with her. We have some folks who are, going to speak on precious metals, gold, silver, and other things from the Swiss America Company. We have Doreen Hannes and Ike Skelton with the Property Rights Coalition and Missourians Against Agenda 21. Both will speak on different days on Agenda 21 and make us aware of what's going on there. Both of them were strong leaders in the fight against the Blue Way. And examples of what people can do at the grassroots level. We have several other organizations that are very self-reliance motivated. We have one vendor coming out, an Afghani war veteran, a friend and of the son of my friend Mike Evans, who his son served in Afghanistan with this fellow. He's formed a company making and selling T-shirts and hats. A percentage of the money goes to veterans' charities. So if you need a T-shirt or a hat, good to get it from him and support some veterans' activities.
Yeah.
We have a new vendor with swords, knives, cutlery of all types, several authors who will be there. A lady from Columbia wrote a novel called The Seed Police about GMOs. Bob Anderson from Seymour, Missouri, is author of the Survivalist novels. And I could kind of go on and on, but, you know, we've got an outstanding group of speakers, an outstanding group of vendors, about 60 in total. Mike Knox from White Harvest Seed Company with heirloom seeds. And it works out to like something like 48 cents an hour for knowledge that literally could save your life someday or at least help you live a better life. So I encourage everybody to come on out.
Exactly.
And if anyone needs more information, it's at preppersandpatriots.net.
Okay, preppersandpatriots.net. It's next weekend. It is Saturday and Sunday at what time in the morning now?
9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And, Dave, you will be out there. Were you going to have a grassroots coalition table or just wander around and visit with
people? Yeah, I'm just going to wander around and visit with people. We can't get enough people together. We're so spread out over the state that I can't find enough people locally to man the table. So we're just not going to be able to do a table. I will be out there quite a bit on Saturday and a little bit on Sunday. I'll be wandering around. I'll be anxious to see to see my friends in the Constitution Party again. I'll be anxious to see my friend Keith again. I'll be anxious to see you. I'll be anxious to see Mike Evans and all of our pals. I'll be doing some networking, so if you folks want to come up and say hi, and that'll be great. I'm no celebrity, and so I won't have any celebrity status.
We both have faces made for radio, Dave.
Yeah, but I'd love to meet each and every one of you, and we'll look forward to. I'm really looking forward to it. I'll see you there at next Saturday morning. And I hope we'll see lots of people there. Don't forget Cynthia on Tuesday. Don't forget Lisa on Wednesday. Don't forget us tomorrow night and next weekend. Don't forget Preppers and Patriots next week. And it's been great talking to you all tonight. Good night, Mike. It's a pleasure, as always.
Night. You take care.
You too, sir.
There are so many contradictions. All these messages we send keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit in? Though the world is torn and shaken, even if your heart is breaking, it's waiting for you. Learn to be